I live in Prospect Heights around the corner from Grand Army Plaza and have lived there for 12 years. But I've lived in Brooklyn since 1986. This is the Heart of Brooklyn, which is a cultural partnership. And it is a partnership between the Garden, the Children's Museum, the Brooklyn Museum, the library, the Brooklyn Public Library System, Prospect Park, and Prospect Park Zoo. And we operate at the center of all of their missions. So we come together to do projects that are best served by the consortium as opposed by any of our individual members. And a perfect example is the GAPCO project, where all of it is the gateway to the heart. It's one of the main gateways to the heart of Brooklyn. Actually, the Grand Army Plaza is part of the Parks Department, and Bailey Fountain and the Soldiers and Sailors Memorial Arch are part of Prospect Park. And operated and managed by the Parks Department in collaboration with Prospect Park Alliance. Well, I think we started with a discussion of interested parties about what to do about Grand Army Plaza. And then we got serious and we worked, we had a session, a visioning session with the Project for Public Spaces to kind of really get, we had about 50, 60 people. It was great to kind of rethink what the plaza could be. And then when the Design Trust RFP came out for their funding and their project, we applied and were delighted after several interviews and revisions of our application to be selected. It's the Grand Army Plaza Coalition, which is called GAPCO. And GAPCO is a coalition of largely institutional, you know, or civic organizations. So everything from Park Slope Civic Council to the library, to Heart of Brooklyn, to the park, to the Eastern Parkway Neighborhood Row Association, to block associations. I mean, really just, you know, DOT has a presence on it. Everyone who has a stake, and there are a couple community members, at-large members as well. The first big part of it after working with Project for Public Spaces was applying for the Design Trust funding and then obviously going through this extraordinary ideas competition. It's been an amazing process. You know, I think that living here and being one of the jurors, and there were several local jurors who actually crossed, I walk my daughter to school every day through Grand Army Plaza. It was really fascinating to see the submissions, and we were fortunate that we got to view all the submissions and then spend time on the final 30. But we, it was very obvious who was, had never been to Central Brooklyn before. And it's an ideas competition, so it doesn't really matter, but you know, there were a lot of solutions proposed that on paper or as ideas sound great, that are somewhat impractical. And I think those flights of fancy actually inform a more pragmatic process in a really delightful way. So I think it was meant to be a gateway to, you know, as the city built out, as Brooklyn built out into what was then farmland. I think it was meant as this grand gesture. And I guess when I think about Grand Army Plaza and what it should or could be to the different constituencies that are very, proximal right there, I think at the moment it serves as a divider between neighborhoods as opposed to a connector. It is so treacherous to get across, although I have to say the new DOT improvements are terrific. I don't know if, you know, as a local or resident, if you've enjoyed now the new plantings, the bike paths. I mean, it is easier. There's more than one way to get to the center and to the arch. But I think that when I think of Heart of Brooklyn and our campus, you know, and I think of who we want to attract here, our visitation varies by institution. Obviously, the library and the park see a largely local visitation. The museum and the garden see more of an out-of-region visitation. So it varies by institution. But I think that Grand Army Plaza should be an extraordinary place for people that are local, but also for people that are visiting. It's so iconic that it would be, if it were just for locals, it would seem to be crazy, you know, like saying, oh, don't go visit the Empire State Building. I'm sorry, that's just for the people who work there. Yes. I think cultural institutions are part of the economic development pie for communities. I think they have to be good neighbors. I think they should encourage, you know, it's twofold. We see a lot, as I said, of local visitation. We want to make sure people own these institutions. They're public collections. They need to, I mean, my son has grown up in them and he talks about his museum and his garden. And I mean, that's the goal. The goal is for the people who are here, the constituents that are here, to feel a sense of ownership, and then to share that with friends and, you know, VFR, the visiting friends and relatives market, and then obviously with the tourist market. I think that our role is so being good neighbors, and in Heart of Brooklyn's case, creating this destination, making it easy and accessible for both locals and out of region visitors. And obviously, with out of region visitors, we want them to leave their money in the community. So we promote the commercial corridors that are adjacent to our institutions. We send people, if they're not going to eat on site at one of the food service providers at the institutions, we want to make sure they shop and eat in the community. So we're big promoters of the local. And I think if you're looking for an authentic experience visiting New York, you're not necessarily headed to Manhattan. When you're looking for a flavor of New York as a visitor, or you want to show your visiting friends New York, you're going to head to the South Bronx, you're going to head to, you know, if you want a Brazilian experience, you may head to 48th Street, but you also might head to Paterson, New Jersey. You know, there are just places all over the region. And Brooklyn certainly is a place that has authenticity. I think it has to be accessible. I think it has to have a connection to community that, and as communities change and the people within communities change, it still has to maintain some kind of, I guess it has to be at the core, but it has to be accessible to whatever subsequent generations or iterations of community occupy it. If you tour the park, if you get on a bike and you ride around the park on any given weekend, the way people use it and the different constituencies that use it are unbelievable, and it's successful, and it's been a park for, you know, 100 plus years, so you see that it has been able to maintain a relationship to a changing community. And I think that's also true of the museum and the library. I mean, being relevant to your constituents is kind of number one priority for our institutions, and they're all public space. So in the museum, which I don't know how long you follow the museum, but prior to about 4 years ago, its facade was very closed, and there was a reimagining of the facade with the Polshek edition. And while some people may not love the aesthetic of the contemporary, you know, onto the McKim Mead and White building, I live across the street, and it has become a place where the community hangs out. It is a front porch, and it's extraordinary. It has changed the way people think about the museum. It's changed the way they use the museum. And couple that with what's going to be soon the 10th anniversary of First Saturdays, which is this extraordinary program to invite the public, one of the first programs of a free evening at the museum. The target for Saturdays have been extraordinary. And, you know, they see between 10 and 15,000 visitors on a First Saturday. And they're people that may not come back to the museum until the next First Saturday, but they are constituents and they use the museum. I don't see people using it the same way they use the front porch of the museum, the plaza at the museum, or even the new newly renovated plaza at the library, because people are still trying to figure out how to use it. And I think once Grand Army Plaza is reimagined a little bit and there's more of a connection between the library's plaza and Grand Army Plaza, I think there'll be greater usage. There's good usage of it now. They've got tables and free Wi-Fi out there. There's free Wi-Fi at the museum. There's Wi-Fi hotspots in the park. So I think there's a lot of usage. But Grand Army Plaza, I think, needs to be imagined in a way that does not make it Prospect Park. And I think we had a lot of good debate. I don't know if Elizabeth talked about it. There were a lot of entries in the competition that continued that pastoral. And the reality is, if you have 500 plus acres of pastoral, you don't necessarily need another 10 acres of it. You know, what should that be? Should it be a Bryant Park? Should it be, you know, I mean, how should it be South Street Seaport? What kind of environment and usage plan, programmatic plan? It's also got a memorial in it. You know, this extraordinary historic memorial. I think you have to combine the elements. So I think, you know, the Sailors and Soldiers Memorial Arch, the Bailey Fountain, some of the sculpture and statuary within the berms, you know, should remain or be recited if necessary to be part of the history of Grand Army Plaza. I think there are challenges with the Olmsted design of the berms, which originally were meant to protect the cars from the pedestrians, and a lot of the proposals that we looked at either did away with the berms or sunk them or elevated them. And I think that there are a lot of challenges to working out how you respect Olmsted's spirit and design without necessarily hewing to it 100%. And I think those are going to be some civic challenges with. I think The difference, I mean, it's all part of brownstone Brooklyn. I mean, the architecture, while various, is still fairly contiguous. You know, it's basically low rise except for some of the new developments. So for me, it's more about the flavor of the neighborhoods, and how you don't see a lot of people. You see a lot of people from Prospect Heights going kind of southwest to shop or to dine in on Flatbush or in the Slope. You don't see the other way happening. And I think that the proper program and design of Grand Army Plaza might facilitate that. I mean, the neighborhoods, Grand Army Plaza has so many different constituencies that are going to weigh in and that should weigh in on how it's used, from people in South Brooklyn who use the park to drive through. And then if you, Grand Army Plaza works really well if you're a vehicle. So from a constituency standpoint, the vehicular contingent is going to have a lot of things to say about adaptive reuse of vehicular space. So I think there are a lot of constituents that you have to think about that are in neighborhoods that aren't necessarily adjacent to Grand Army Plaza, but they use Grand Army Plaza. I think an ideas competition is great. I think that, you know, we had a proposal with a funicular running around the plaza and into the park. You know, I doubt that's actually going to be one of the solutions, but it was delightful to see someone saying, well, what about this? And I, you know, there were definitely streams of thought. You know, there were the people who sunk the subway, there were the people who elevated the roadway, you know, so you could kind of group the entries into various categories in terms of how they treated certain challenges. But I think even though there were general themes in terms of the way people dealt with it, it's just the particulars, or it was obvious there were entries that were not from this country. And the way that they informed their solutions was really lovely. I think that people use public space differently in different countries. And so I think that was terrific about an ideas competition, like just having it that broadly based and not saying, okay, you're just Brooklyn entries or you're just New York entries. You know, and some of it is dependent on the space itself and how people use it. But you know, people use parks in a certain way, and some people, you know, you go to Prospect Park on any given day and people are there at 5:30 in the morning, like getting in line to grab a barbecue pit because they're going to spend all day at the park. And it's extraordinary. You know, I don't think you see that as much in parks in other parts. I mean, you see that in the Bronx. You see that in, I would say, economically challenged communities where people actually choose to spend an entire day in a public space. And again, it's a sense of ownership. You know, this is my park, this is what we do. I live in this community, kind of on the Crown Heights, Prospect Heights border, and I remember moving in and thinking, and I moved from an industrial neighborhood where there was no activity in the evenings, except for the artists that we, you know, we live there, but beyond us, there was no street activity. And when I moved here, I remember thinking, it's so noisy, because it remains a Caribbean community, and people are out on the street, and it's not like they're hanging out scary. It's this, you know, the block behind my street, Lincoln Place, is just a place where people hang out on the stoops, and they hang out and they listen to music, and they're just, you know, it's a very island culture where people want to be outside because it's, you know, it's what happens. And so I think people do use space differently and think about, you know, how they use space differently. Well, I think you have to have everything on the table and everyone's point of view on the table, and then at some point you have to rein it in and say, okay, these are the phases, and these are, you know, and especially for something as iconic and massive as Granite. I mean, it's a massive space. And again, it sees so much vehicular traffic and pedestrians kind of don't know how to navigate it. And there were a lot of people, I mean, the competition, everything from, there were entries that put housing in the plaza, which is obviously something that's a challenge for New York City. We don't have enough affordable housing. I'm not sure you should take parkland and turn it into affordable housing, or any housing for that matter. So I think, you know, there were a lot of ideas that, you know, got some audience and then were set aside. But But yeah, I think ideas really, I think putting everything on the table helps. Well, I think getting the just the awareness campaign that the Design Trust and Gapco are doing about the competition and the winners, but it's not just the winners. I mean, they're gonna we're gonna display, I think, 25 to 30 of the entries, and then Design Trust is gonna organize the threads of ideas that came out of the competition into some didactic material that the public can chew on, and that stakeholders can chew on to say, okay, well, the entries are here, but what they brought to bear are these kind of major issues. And then I think getting feedback and having the public People's Choice Award, public is going to vote on the competition. But also for Gapco, I think talking to some of our elected officials, even though the budget is really tight for the next year and then beyond, probably for the next 24 months, trying to find some funding for a destination and origin study, traffic study, would probably be one of the next steps for us to figure out where the vehicles are coming from, how, where they're going to, and how they pass through the plaza, so that any solution accommodates kind of that information. And I think Jeanette Sadik-Khan is amazing in the way she has taken back some of the roadways for pedestrians and bicycles has been terrific. And so I would love to see that happen while this administration is still in office, because I think we have a real advocate in public space and understanding the role of cultural organizations in public space, and understanding how the role we can play as culturals, adjacent to that space. I would like to feel safer walking across the plaza. I actually no longer walk on the inside of the berms in the plaza because I don't feel like there's enough pedestrian traffic, even at 8 a.m. I was assaulted on the inside of the berm about 2 months ago at 8 a.m. So, because it's shorter for me to cut across the interior of the plaza than it is to go around Plaza Street, but now I hew to Plaza Street where there are doormen and commuters, and it just feels a little, and I was with my daughter, so it was kind of traumatic. But I guess what I see is a place where the farmer's market is perhaps not just on Saturdays, where there's other activity within the plaza that animates the plaza a little bit. As I say, I don't see it as a place where necessarily you would need refuge. I think you have the park for that, you have the garden for that. I see it as an animated space, an urban space. Some kind of combination of, the kind of use you see at Bryant Park or some of the more active urban parks, But I also see the memorials as a place to visit. I mean, you go to the Étoile in Paris, and really all you do is go up to the arch, and either you pay to go into the memorial, or you go to the top, or you stand on the arch and look out to gazillion lanes of traffic. So I don't see it that way. I think the Bailey Fountain is amazing. And it's, you can see how many wedding parties are there on any given day. So it's definitely a backdrop for civic activity. But again, I don't know that you need it to be a large urban gathering space, because again, for concerts in the park, I mean, you have the park right there. So I think part of figuring out how to activate Grand Army Plaza is figuring out what the appropriate use is, and obviously getting constituent and stakeholder voices in on that. I mean, and there's a lot of dissent on how it should be used. People want to be able to play chess and have it more like Washington Square Park, have a playground in the middle. And I think really what you do with the vehicular traffic is going to determine, or if you figure out the uses and then figure out how to accommodate the vehicular traffic that still maintains the flow of traffic that DOT needs to do for people to move around the borough, while facilitating a new programmatic, activity. There are more lanes of traffic on Grand Army Plaza than there are on the Houston Expressway. In the middle of a residential community, it's not an expressway. So I think, when you have people who live on the plaza, you're going to get one set of issues. Don't move the berms, or how are you going to contain the noise, depending on where you put the traffic. And it was interesting, too, we commented that a variety, a number of the entries routed, if they change the orientation of the traffic, they seem to route it all towards the Crown Heights, Prospect Heights side. And I, of course, thought, well, of course, it's where you put the transfer stations in poorer communities, even though certainly Prospect Heights and Crown Heights are enjoying you know, a higher household income influx based on just pure real estate churn. But that was kind of interesting, and we couldn't figure out, because many of the entries we were told were not domestic, if it was just the way it, you know, that I'm not sure they knew the demographics, you know, the specific demographics of the neighborhoods and the communities. But it was just interesting how, like, oh yeah, put the traffic over here. So, you know, I think we have to guard against that at all costs, that, you know, whatever the best solution is, it's the best solution for the majority of the stakeholders, you know, not just the wealthier communities that perhaps have more voice.